Grow Great, the podcast, episode 4033. Today it is part two, niching down, the key to effective marketing. We'll do it next. Welcome inside the Ella Studio. My name is Randy Kentrell, your host here. Grow Great, that's the podcast. It's also the website, growgreat.com. This is episode 4033. You can just plug that number in over on the sidebar where it says type the episode number here, and it'll take you there. I'm glad that you're here. Hope all is well with you. If you haven't listened to part one, go back and do that. It's episode 4032, obviously. Today, I want to talk to you about getting mad, getting even. No, I am not encouraging you to go bully all the people who might be getting in your way of running an effective business or having an effective career or even being effective in your marketing. I am urging you to embrace your inner anger. At least until you get angry enough, things aren't likely going to improve. Now, this isn't some temper tantrum. No, I'm not advising that you go kicking and screaming and pitch a wall-eyed fit. It's much more quiet. Well, it can start out quiet. Maybe the better way to say it is it's more sober-minded, and that just means it's serious. It's not infantile. It's anger with a purpose. I don't think there's anything that can replace it. Few things can be as effective as a catalyst for change, i.e. improvement, than getting mad enough to make a change. Now, here's how I recently channeled my own anger, and I just want my story to serve to help you identify yours and to figure out some ways to make it work to your favor. It certainly wasn't, and it isn't, my first bout with anger. I don't know when that was. Maybe it was elementary school. It was probably earlier than that when I first experienced it. I suspect that's likely true for you as well. It was probably manifested in this inner feeling of, well, I'll show you. You said that to yourself? Of course, we've all said that to ourselves. I'll show you. And maybe it was after somebody had told us that we couldn't do something. Or maybe it was after repeated failed attempts at doing something. And sad to say, very sad to say, as small kids, which is probably when it first happened to us, it probably came at the hands of a parent, a coach, a teacher, somebody who was important in our life and somebody who was well-intended. Well, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Not every adult in every child's life is well-intended, but let's assume for the sake of today's conversation that the people that were in your life as a child, they did want your best interest. Come on. Surely that's true. I hope that's true for you. But maybe they said something, and maybe they didn't mean anything by it, but for some reason it was a discouraging word. Yeah, where seldom is heard a discouraging word, but sometimes with small children, there's way too many discouraging words. But there was something that happened. And on this particular occasion, you bucked up. You bucked up and you got mad about it. You got mad enough that you were able to direct that energy into some positive movement. And it was probably manifested with you telling yourself, I'll show you. Sometimes positive enough to result in success. That's the kind of anger that I'm talking about today. This whole niching down in our marketing, it begins with the stuff in our head. And that's why this is important. And that's why this is a very non-traditional marketing conversation. So don't tune me out. I know that you want tactics. I know that you want hardcore do this and this will give you the result. I know that you want it to be like this cut and dried mathematical equation, 2 + 2 = 4. And you want it to be just like that. Effective marketing doesn't work that way. And we usually go straight to the tactical because that's what we want. I get it. I understand that. the action steps, the how-to of marketing. That's not what this is. This is much, much deeper. This is our belief. It's our belief in ourselves. We can get in trouble if we try to market or serve a market because of what somebody else thinks or feels. It's just true. And I want you to apply what I tell you today, not to just your business, not just to your enterprise, but to you. And not necessarily even just to you, your career, but you, your life. Now, absolutely, yes, there are some principles of marketing that are ineffective, and there are others that are effective. Little doubt about that. But you could take something that was effective for somebody else and try it, and it be a colossal failure. I mean, it's just not cut and dried that if you do this, that will be your result. Always guaranteed. I mean, that's why there's so many things written about marketing. And after all, we are dealing with humans. And guess what we're dealing with, folks? We're dealing with human psychology. We're dealing with what we think, what we feel, what we believe. There may be no better a statement about all of this than the current U.S. presidential election. As I'm sitting here in the Yellow Studio recording today's show, it is October the 20th, 2016. Just last night, no, I didn't watch it, but last night was the final presidential debate. I have no doubt that there was little civility shown, and people are very one way or the other about this election. I'm apolitical, don't care. I'm a capitalist. I absolutely want what's best for the country, but this isn't a political podcast and I'm not going to turn it into one. But it does speak to the importance of what we believe to be true and how what we believe can completely alter what we hear. I mean, you can read today's commentary about last night's debate and you will find some people who have one take on it. Some people have a different take on it. It's like, were you... And these are intelligent people. Were you watching the same debate? I mean, it's as though you couldn't have been watching the same thing. That's proof. Proof of how important this topic is of our belief. And mostly today, it's about our belief in ourselves. Because we can get in trouble if we try to market or serve a market because of what somebody else thinks or feels. Now, before we can create some effective plan, a real action step, and I know that's what you want to do. We have to really know and understand who we are and why we want to serve this market. Not caring is ineffective. I can guarantee you that. If you want a surefire way of engaging in ineffective marketing, then involve yourself in marketing where you just don't care. Apathy never fueled anybody's effective marketing. Passion does. And sometimes that passion is born of anger. Sometimes we don't make progress until we get mad enough to do something about it. I have found, and this is a topic for another day, but I have found that anger in the C-suite, anger at a top leader level, that's when big changes happen. When somebody gets hacked off enough and they say, I've had it up to here, I'm not going to take it anymore. I'm not going to endure this market problem or this internal problem. We're going to fix this once and for all. That's when things get done. And it's true whether we're 5 years old. It's true whether we're 75 years old. Anger can be a positive fuel that we need to get unstuck. And few things are worse than being stuck. But that's where many of us spend the majority of our time. Stuck. Stationary. Staying in one spot. Fearful of moving in any direction. Just feeling like it's safer to just stay put. We're just going to stay where we are. Because we know what this is. And we step in that direction. We're not sure what that'll be. And we step in this other. We're not sure what that. But we know our present pain. And so we satisfy ourselves with the present pain, not willing to risk it. The problem is this: success is not going to come and chase us down. We can't stand still and expect our situation to improve. Okay, so why do people do that? Why do we do that? Why do we stay still when we know success isn't going to come and just tackle us? Because it feels better. It feels better than taking a chance, because it feels more comfortable than doing something that makes us feel uncomfortable. We will likely choose comfort over discomfort all day long. Well, duh. But this isn't about choosing discomfort. Because just because something is uncomfortable doesn't mean that it's wise or profitable. Fear takes on many, many, many different forms, and it can be directed in a multitude of directions. My most recent anger was sparked by people and a culture that I knew was not congruent with who I am or who I most want to be. Right? We're talking about beliefs. It's one of the biggest risks that we face in business and in our careers. That is, we can view an opportunity without properly considering the downside. And then there's the fear. For me, it was fear that I might not be seeing things as clearly as I felt like I really was. And it manifested itself in me pushing forward for months and months, even though everything in me was screaming, "This is so not right for you." But I ignored it. I ignored it as best I could. Now, here's what happened. Day after day, I fought through the misery. I fought through the dread, trying to convince myself that maybe my instincts, maybe my intuition was wrong. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm highly intuitive, and rarely has my intuition failed me. I don't know if you put a lot of credence in Myers-Briggs, and quite frankly, I'm not sure how much I do either. I kind of like these kind of assessments and things. Now, I don't put tremendous stock in any one of them. For me, they're just kind of vehicles and tools, but I do find them interesting. And based on the Myers-Briggs, I am an INFJ. I'm highly intuitive, and my intuition has rarely failed me. Now, as a leader, I'm an evidence-based leader. Because I am so highly intuitive, I really lean on data and information to confirm my intuition. Well, this time, I was pushing hard to ignore my intuition because I wanted this endeavor to succeed. Now, it's great and wonderful to want to succeed. We all need to start with some desire for it, but you already do. Yeah, I mean, come on, you're not going to be listening to a podcast titled Grow Great if you're not interested in pursuing the endeavor. But all along, for me in this endeavor, I felt like a round peg being pounded into a square hole. And it was just like every day I just kept trying to convince myself that maybe I had edges that were more square than round, even though deep down I knew it wasn't true. I knew I was round. Well, in more ways than one, am I round? And then it happened. It happened. I finally got mad. I got angry. And I got angry with myself for refusing to listen to a lifetime of experience, a lifetime of know-how, and a lifetime of accurate, more often than not, intuition. I got mad that I had spent so much time pursuing such a poor opportunity for me. Mad that I had spent so much time, spent too much money, and did it with people that weren't even close to being the type of people that I most enjoy being around. And other than a service that I found powerful, still do, there was nothing else about this endeavor that I believed in, nothing I had any faith or confidence in, nothing that was congruent with my personality, my principles, or my philosophy. And by this time, I had invested almost 9 months. And that fueled my anger even more. And it wasn't directed toward anybody or anything other than me. And so I made up my mind that I was going to take a moment. Well, okay, I didn't take a moment. I took more than a moment. I took about a week to reach some final resolutions about what I knew was right, what I wanted to do, given, you know, this newfound self-awareness, which was entirely sparked by me getting mad enough to do something about my situation, a situation that was entirely my own doing. So don't sit there thinking that I'm preaching, be a victim. No, don't be a victim. If you are a victim, you're a victim of your own choosing. Yes, bad things can happen to good people, but the way we respond to those things is still our choosing. It was about this time that I recorded a podcast episode over at leaningtowardwisdom.com. Now, Leaning Toward Wisdom is a passion project of mine, mostly got nothing to do with business, and you probably aren't even interested in it, but I did an episode that was entitled, Don't Cling to a Mistake Just Because You Spent a Lot of Time Making It. I'm putting a link in the show notes to that episode if you care to go give it a whirl. Well, I fell prey to that phenomenon of clinging onto a mistake that clearly I had made, but I'd spent 9 months making this mistake. I mean, I had so much time invested in this thing, so much money invested in this thing, and I hung on to it because of that. Because it's hard to pull the plug. You know that. Even when we know, even when we feel, even when we believe that it's never going to work out, it's still hard to let go of it. There's always that small twinge of doubt in our mind thinking, you know, well, what if? Well, I mean, what if we're wrong? What if this could work out? What if this would be favorable? And then we manifest in our mind, we get it all worked out, and we start romanticizing and fantasizing about it working out. But it almost never does. Then there is all that noise that we hear online about not quitting too soon and hustle and putting in the work, and hey, all good advice, but only if it fits in the context of what's happening with us. It doesn't, as good as all that advice is, it's really bad advice if the context does not fit with where we're at and what's going on with us. I mean, if I offer you some pie-in-the-sky business opportunity that is way more sales pitch than reality, the sooner you realize the opportunity isn't very real, the better. Staying with it longer, hustling at it faster, isn't going to make it more valid. You just need to come to grips with the reality of it. Getting angry with ourselves requires a staunch devotion to our own self-awareness. Accurate self-awareness. That has to be our non-negotiable. I'm a big believer, any client I've ever had will tell you, I'm a huge believer in non-negotiables, non-negotiables in the workplace. What are the non-negotiables? That is, what are you just absolutely positively unwilling to bend on? Anything? Now, a lot of people make the mistake in their own life, and particularly business leaders do in their organization, of either there's nothing that's non-negotiable or everything is non-negotiable, and you can't have it that way. My mistake was trying too hard to negotiate because I thought the possibility might exist that I might fit into that hole that was shaped very differently than I knew I was. Well, logically, I knew it didn't make sense. I mean, I knew I wasn't shaped right for this opportunity, but I pushed hard to make it fit. I proved that any of us can endure an awful lot of dread, an awful lot of grief, an awful lot of pain, because I did. Listen, it wasn't grit or tenacity that I lacked. No, it was fit. It was fitness. No, not in the sense of a physical fitness, but fitness in the sense that it just didn't fit me. I didn't fit it. This endeavor was not a good fit for me. Why are you negotiating your self-awareness? Why are you negotiating who you are? Why are you negotiating what you do and what you do best? You as a person, you as a leader, you as a business owner, you as a company. It's not the road to success. Now, yes, you may profit financially for a time, but at what cost? What will you negotiate? What are you going to sacrifice? What are you going to surrender to try to be somebody that you aren't, to be some company that you aren't? Today, I'm urging you in this episode to get mad enough to stop it. Mad enough to get on track to be true to who you are. Mad enough to go all in on your strengths and stop trying to leverage your weaknesses, which we all know is a ridiculous strategy. We can't operate our businesses by shoving all our chips in the middle of the table on a weak hand. Then stop doing it with your enterprise. Stop doing it with your career. Stop doing it with your life. The key to self-awareness is accuracy. We have to really know ourselves. Getting angry at ourselves with a false sense of who we are, well, that's not going to serve us. And we've seen that, and we probably have been guilty of it ourselves. We have been guilty of it. If you've lived any time at all on the planet, you've been guilty of this. Even small kids are guilty of this. Especially small kids are guilty of this. We beat ourselves up for failing to be somebody that we're not. We get mad because we try something and the first shot out of the gate, it doesn't go well. Okay, too many people are living that life. Don't join. I mean, that's just the crowd of misery. That's the crowd of people who just have this perfect expectation that there's no way they're going to fulfill. No, that's not what we're talking about. Self-awareness is not bound up in limiting ourselves, though. You know, sometimes I'll sit with a CEO or a business owner, and you can just tell over time they have this belief, a really hardcore belief, that the performance of their company is going to top out or either has topped out at a certain level. And, you know, let's say it's a revenue level. You can tell they just can't see the organization performing at a higher level. And part of my job as a business coach is to try to encourage these people to consider that their role as the owner, as the CEO, as the leader, it's a true statement. Great leaders see the future first. And if you are a leader and you would be a great leader, and I would have you be great because, come on, that's the name of the show, Grow Great, then I would have you consider you really have got to work on your belief. You've really got to work on your self-awareness. You've got to be able to see it first, because if you can't see it first, nobody else in your organization is going to be able to see it. And few things are sadder to me than sitting across from an owner or a CEO, or sitting beside an owner and a CEO and having these conversations, and they just can't see the organization performing that much better. Maybe it's a profit level. They just really can't see it improving, at least not dramatically. Now, they can always see marginal improvement, but they think it may be kind of glorified hoo-ha to think that they're going to be much better. Other people, I've encountered some CEOs and business owners who just, they just seem to find it impossible to see themselves, to believe in themselves, that they could be at the helm of a company that's too much larger than where they're at right now. And all of these things can restrict growth. All of these things can keep companies and careers and lives stuck. It's not intentional. It might not even be conscious. But boy, it's effective. I mean, it's the most effective emergency brake on the planet. That stuff in our head. A business owner, knowingly or not, thinks that his company is, let's say, mostly topped out at about a $12 million annual revenue. And he just cannot see it growing beyond that point. His self-awareness is solid and mostly accurate, but he's got these limiting beliefs, and they're based mostly on his fears and his beliefs. Fear, self-doubt, his beliefs. They're working against this accurate self-awareness that he might otherwise have. In our next episode, we're going to close out this series in part 3 with some things that we can learn to hold our ground with ourselves while at the same time reaching some new heights that we may have thought before were not possible. And it doesn't involve being something other than the best version of ourself. Be angry. Angry enough to think about the market that you're serving and how well that you're doing it. How effective are you? Angry enough to think about how fragmented. This is another side of the coin. Angry enough to think about how fragmented you might be and how it's likely that that fragmentation is stemming from you trying to be something you're not or trying to make your company be something it's not. I mean, plenty of successful people have lost their way because they didn't really know their strengths and they thought it was smarter to broaden their marketing and to broaden their offering. Meanwhile, some of the best and the brightest fully embrace who they are and why they do what they do and nothing else. What business are you in? Why? Why are you in that business? What business do you want to be in? Is there some new angle that you want to enter? Why? What are you doing to protect yourself and your self-awareness? Are you doing anything? Or are you sacrificing it? Are you negotiating it because you're listening to all the wrong sounds? Experts, friends, competitors, partners, anybody who is trying to convince you to be a button-down, custom suit-wearing executive when you know that you're just a blue jean Nike-wearing kind of guy who prefers flannel shirts in the winter. Today's the day that you just need to buck up and you need to get mad enough to say, No. I'm going to be who I am. Yes, I'm going to be the best version of myself, but I'm going to be who I am. And my company, we're going to be who we are. As a leader of your company, your effective niche marketing hinges on what you think, what you believe. Start surrendering that, and you're quickly going to lose your way by joining the ranks of ineffective marketers who don't know who or what they are, certainly don't know why they are what they are or why they do what they do. How can the market figure it out? Consider that. If we don't know who we are, if we don't know what we are, if we're willing to negotiate all of those things, how can the market figure it out? Well, now you're seeing the problem. Yeah, now you see the marketing problem here. It's confusion. It's delusion. If we are confused, if we are deluded, we can't expect the market to respond to our message. We can't figure it out. They sure can't. Sit down and think seriously about what you're negotiating, the things that you really don't want to negotiate, but for some reason you are. You're giving up yourself, probably with a lot of delusions about it working out to your favor. That's what I did. I want you to consider that this may be the very reason that you're struggling. You're trying to leverage your weaknesses instead of your strengths. Does that sound like a good plan? No, you know it doesn't sound like a good plan. And next time we'll talk more about that and we'll put a bow on this with episode 3. I will tell you that just recently I embarked on a new endeavor. As we wind down, I'll share a bit about this. Some time ago, I set out to create an offering for a very particular niche. I've talked about this before, but as we put a bow on today's show, I'll share a little bit more of an insight. And I'm only really about a week or so into this Elder Law Elite. I am forming a group of 8 elder law attorneys into a peer advisory group. I'm calling it Elder Law Elite. In particular, I'm calling this first group of 8 the Founders Club. You can find more about that. Go to the website, growgreat.com, and there's a link there that says the Founders Club of Elder Law Elite, if you're interested in that. You probably aren't, but I'm sharing with you my little niche in this niche marketing effort because I've got some people in my life that are great friends, well-intended and all that. And I've had a number of people who have been kind of urging me and pushing me. And this speaks to the point of parents, coaches, teachers, when we were kids, trying to help us, but really are hurting us And sometimes we have to get mad and we got to put a stop to it. Well, I had it happen. I had it happen with a good friend, and he's always thinking of these strategic alliances, you know, and these partnerships and things. And so he's like, you know, I could introduce you to this person. And I'm like, no. I want to do what I want to do. I know exactly what I want to do, and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it my way. I know you're trying to help. I told him on the phone just this week, I said, but I'm not going to join you on that hamster wheel. This is a guy, he really enjoys the hamster wheel. Well, hamsters enjoy the wheel. There's no question about it. I don't think it's profitable. Now, the hamster might think it's profitable. The problem is I'm not a hamster. He is. So great. Get on the hamster wheel. But I said, I'm not going to join you. This is a perfect illustration of my anger fueling me in a positive direction. Because otherwise, I could have fallen prey to his suggestions, his advice, which might be right for somebody, but they're so wrong for me. And I put up my hands and I said, no, stop it. I appreciate the help, but you're not helping me. So there you go. Hey, my name is Randy Cantrell. I'm glad that you're here. I'm glad that you joined me, and I'm glad that you shared about half an hour of your life with me. I would appreciate if you would tell others about the podcast. I'm going to end up making this, I think, more effective, because that's also a goal for me, to have an effective podcast. Try to provide some greater insights and things, because it is about improving. It's about growing great. And we will do part 3 of Niching Down, the Key to Effective Marketing, next time. In the meanwhile, subscribe, tell a friend, and I bid you adieu. Greetings from inside the Yellow Studios.